We all want to be helpful. Hence, when we think that something works well, we want to promote it as soon as possible. But you can actually do a lot of harm if you're promoting inputs that are not that great.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Well, it happens over and over again. Farmers who trial agricultural innovations report remarkable yield gains. But when those smallholders are given their new seeds, the yields hardly change in the real world. So what's going wrong, and how can we improve the way we conduct the experiments and interpret the results? That's the focus of a fascinating new paper that digs deeper into the results of two of these trials. Rashid Lajaj of the Universidad de los Andes in Bogotá is one of the researchers. Welcome, Rashid.
Hello, Tim.
Now tell me, how often do we find the problem that these real-world results with new types of seed or fertilizer, for example, they just don't match up to the experimental trials?
This is something that is hard to know because it is not trials. We don't have really good data on how much the production is. Mm. We know what the yields are because we do surveys with small farmers, but we cannot attribute, okay, this farmer is getting that much additional yield because they're using fertilizer. So usually this is much more difficult to assess, and it's hard to tell whether it's doing as well as in the trials. But there are two reasons to worry. The first one is, let's talk about maize, for example. Average yields in the US, Europe could be about 8 tons per hectare. Mm-hmm. When you look at the agronomic trials, it looks like you can get about 5 tons per hectare in conditions that would be similar to African conditions. And then you look at what the farmers are doing, and they have 1 ton per hectare on average in Africa, 1.5 at best in some places. Wow, there is a huge difference. It's hard to completely attribute this to the use of inputs, but it is quite a source of worry. The second one is, one of the biggest puzzles in development economics is trying to understand why farmers seem not to adopt some technologies that have been shown to be very promising according to agronomic trials, or because it has been doing very well in other contexts, in India, in other places, and then they don't use it. Why wouldn't they use it? There are lots of theoretical explanations for this. It could be because it has a high level of risk. There is a credit constraint. They need the cash to be able to invest. It could be the lack of information. They just don't know how good it is. But all of this is hard to explain why it happens over and over, even when there are some credit programs, when there are some help information that is being provided. And once one is using it, if it was that great, it should spread spontaneously to other farmers. But it's not happening that much. And it is a big puzzle in development economics, because we want to know how to solve poverty, how to reduce poverty. And if these farmers were being 3-4 times more productive, they would earn much more, even once we discount the cost of these inputs, and they would be out of poverty in many cases. And we know that most of the poor are in rural areas. So that is a big puzzle. And hence, one of the potential explanations for why they don't use it is simply because the technology is not that great, at least in some of the situations. And that has very big implications, because should we invest more in programs that help disseminate the existing technologies, or should we invest more in agronomic research and all kind of research that helps bringing new technologies to these farmers, that creates the technologies before bringing them to the farmers? And so part of what we are helping here is to say, okay, be worried that in some cases, the technology may seem very promising in the trials, but it may not be the case in the farmers' conditions. But we need to test them in conditions that are much closer to the farmers' conditions if we want to actually know whether it is really worthwhile promoting and investing a lot in forming farmers so that they can benefit from these technologies.
Is what happens now a sort of rule of thumb adjustment, that if you get a very exciting trial result and say you've got a 100% uplift, then policymakers just assume that actually what that means is there's 50% at best?
Exactly. People are aware that it doesn't always go as well as what we see according to the trials. Mm-hmm. The problem is, people think, okay, we know this, but we have our solution. We have a systematic adjustment. And for example, one common rule is you need to have a return that is 2-to-1 so that you actually want to promote that input package. A return that is 2-to-1 is 100% return on your investment. That is huge. If I have an investment that has a 50% return, I would definitely invest in this investment. The reason why someone may say, even with 50% investment, I'm not going there, is some sort of mistrust or adjustment from knowing that these trials are ideal conditions, and in less ideal conditions, that may be less, so I will set the bar higher. The problem is that this systematic adjustment is not exactly what real life is. In some cases, it may actually need a stronger adjustment than this. It will be less than half of what it looks in these trials. And in some cases, the actual return is about as good as what you find in the trial. So that's the problem with having one rule of thumb instead of being really more cautious of really thinking what would be the returns in farming conditions.
So obviously the thing to do is to improve the trials, isn't it? That's the focus of what you're doing in your research. Hill, tell me more about the trials. Who's running these trials?
Well, it's typically agronomists, soil scientists, they're researchers. First, it typically starts in labs, but then there are on-farm trials that are still run by agronomists and soil scientists who want to know in these conditions how it works. But typically, there is a bit of a thinking that we want to know about the yield potential associated to the input package. If we want to know the yield potential, we still think of it as, in good conditions, what the yields would be. And perhaps that is one of the problems. We don't necessarily want to know the yield potential under good conditions, but we really want to know what's the yield that we get in standard farmers' conditions, I'd say.
Yes, does that search for yield potential affect how they choose the farmers that they're going to run the trials with?
The way in which farmers are selected could be one source of bias. How does it happen typically? The researchers typically have some contacts initially, or they just go, sometimes there is village meetings, and they inform, this is the program that we want to implement. And they typically, it's a bit of a convenient sample of who is interested in participating, which seems relatively fine. But what we see in the study is you compare this kind of selection, you go to a village meeting, you inform, and you say, okay, who wants to participate? And on the other side, we took five random persons in the village. We make a full listing of the village and we take five random persons. And you could see that the characteristics are very different. Those who come more spontaneously are more educated, they're wealthier, they have better soils. And that is quite different from what you get from the random selected farmers.
And when those trials are going on, is it possible that the actions of the farmers in the trials can accidentally introduce another source of bias?
Yeah, definitely. We know, agronomists know, that a good management matters. It is a form of input. If you have the right spacing between your planting, if you do good weeding, lots of practices, the way you put your fertilizer, the timing, all these things will have a lot of impact on the yield increase that you may get from the input. It is not just because sometimes people think, okay, if whatever the practices are, as long as they are the same, think of these agronomic trials are trying next to it, let's say a standard common package that would be the kind of control area. And then you have next to it another 5 by 5 meters area where you test one input package. And eventually you test different input packages next to the other and you have this kind of control areas. And sometimes we think as long as you do the same thing in all of these plot subplots, it doesn't matter because you're not creating a bias. But the problem is the management not only affects the average yield that you get, it will affect the difference in the yields that you get between the input package and without input package. Let's say, for example, if you do a good weeding, that will help the fertilizer not get into the weeding and getting more weed with this fertilizer, but more of that fertilizer will be used for the crop that you want to grow. So weeding not only gets you higher yield, it gets you a higher yield response. And if the farmer are better at doing their weedings, then they will actually get higher yield response. And that generates a bias because of the behavior of the farmers. If your goal is to get more of the yield potential, then you may want ideal conditions. But if you want to know it in farmers' conditions, then you want to have something that is even closer to what the farmers' conditions are.
Yes, because it sounds as well that the agronomists with the best intentions are also accidentally biasing these results upwards as well.
Totally. One thing is we know there is a Hawthorne effect, which means that people tend to be more reactive to the fact that they're being observed because it's a study, because it's research, and they may behave differently. The one thing is it is very difficult to avoid. Even if you try to have very normal conditions, farmers may think, no, this is a serious thing. I have to put more effort into this. And hence, they may want to do a very good weeding so that the results look good. And because in a way, they want to please the researchers. researcher. And that's unfortunate because sometimes the researcher actually wants the actual conditions.
Yeah.
But it's important to try to pass the message, really try to do it the same way as what you were doing in other places. One of the things that we observed, for example, is you get into the trial and you see this very clean weeding. And just next to it is still the same farmer's plot. And you see this plot that has very poor weeding, that has very bad conditions. Spacing is very irregular. What happened there and here? Okay. So these conditions that are created are not the same. But it's true that the researcher can play a big role in what is the message that is being conveyed. And in many cases, the message is even having someone that actually follows the farmer and says, oh, did you prepare the plot because we're coming tomorrow for the planting? Did you do your weedings? No, it's not enough. You need to do more, etc. And there is a technical assistance so that things are done well. So you do want a minimum of support so that it's planting at the time that it should and some of the practices that should be followed. But there is a risk in conveying the message that we want to have a very clean trial.
In this paper, you reevaluated the results of two trials. So what were the experiments here? What were the initial results?
We did it for a maize fertilizer package and a soya integrated soil fertility management package, which is just a sort of best bet or combination of chemical and non-chemical fertilizer, in some cases with the improved seeds, that is believed to give quite a high return. This was done with our co-authors in this work from the International Institute for Tropical Agriculture, and it was part of actual agronomic research. So there was some publication that was also done on the results from these agronomic trials. So we really wanted to start from, okay, these are trials, agronomic trials that are used for this purpose. Mm-hmm. And on the side of this, we did our study to understand how much this relates to what farmers are doing and how different it is from what farmers are doing. We had the maize and the soya best bet packages, we'll call them. In the case of maize, we made a number of adjustments to try to project what the returns would be if instead of these trial conditions, we would have farmer conditions. And the conclusion was the returns would be about the same for the maize, whereas for the soya, the return would be much lower. So the maize had a good benefit cost ratio and it remains about as good. The soya went from super profitable to not worth investing once you do the adjustments. That's when we talked about this rule of thumb. It's kind of what tells us it can really depend on a lot of factors, but it's not something that will be systematically about 50% overshooting when we just do it through trials.
What sort of adjustments are you making here? Because clearly you can't run the experiment again. So these are econometric adjustments, are they?
That's true. We thought of a calculation adjustment, management adjustment, a soil adjustment, and then other forms of selection that may happen, but that didn't turn out to have much of an effect. The calculation adjustment comes from two reasons. One is sometimes the crop can be a complete failure for reasons that are not really due to the crop itself. Mm-hmm. Let's say there is a flooding. Let's say some animal came and ate the crop that you had in this plot. Then you cannot estimate what the production was. So one thing is, if you are an agronomist, you say, I cannot estimate what is the return because there was a flooding here. And in some cases, they just drop these observations. Whereas as economists, putting ourselves in the position of the farmer, we think of it as, well, wait a second, the farmer invested money in the inputs and you get flooding happening, they lost their money. So you need to count this is a case where I got zero return on my input. And obviously, when I will calculate my return based on all the plot, it makes a difference if I count these as zero or I take them out. Mm. There is a similar adjustment that could be done in some cases when there is low germination. Suppose that half of the area did not germinate. Do you want to calculate the increase in yield in the area that germinated or in the full area? Again, as economists, we think, let's keep the full area because people invested in that full area. Mm. Practices can vary a lot. But in some cases, they do this adjustment for taking out the part that did not germinate because I cannot calculate the response to the input in that case. And that could lead to some overestimate. Now, these calculation things is really something that varies. So we're cautious to say, depending on whether the researchers are making these adjustments or not. But things that will happen pretty much all the time is this management adjustment that is needed. One of these examples that I gave was, what if they do a much better weeding and spacing and all the other practices that actually affect the response? The way we try to do this adjustment is first through econometric estimations. Let's just take the example of better weeding. We look at what is the impact of having better weeding versus less good weeding on the yield response that you get. because we are also observing what is the quality of the weeding that is done in the same farmer's plot next to it, then we say, what would be the yield if the management was not the quality of the management that is done in this trial, but it is the quality of the management that is done in the outside of the trial in the same farmer's plot. And we do the same thing for soil adjustment. Farmers could be selecting some soils, either because there's a selection of farmers, sometimes it's farmers with better soils. And second, they could say, no, for this trial, I actually want to put my better soils or my less good soils. It varies. Each farmer can have their decision for picking some soils. But as a result, different soils lead to different response. What would be the return if it was more average soil quality compared to the soil quality that you have in these trials? And once we apply this whole set of adjustments, that's when we see that the returns in the case of soya can completely drop versus in the case of maize package, it remained very stable. The other issue is that in some cases, farmers drop from the study. And that could be because they don't see very good returns or very good yield after one or two seasons. When it is a multiple season, they may drop. And if you drop these farmers from the study, you are excluding farmers that were typically the ones with less yield or yield response. So we provide lots of techniques also for trying to deal with these issues and what seem to be best practices to avoid these kind of problems.
How close do you feel these results that you have achieved are to real world conditions?
That's a good question. We definitely take a good step towards farming conditions. It's always difficult to say we are exactly on it because getting into farmers' conditions is a moving target. The farmers themselves would adjust in real life. If they know that this kind of seeds require more water, they may put more water into it, or it requires more spacing, more weeding. If I use fertilizer, they will adjust themselves. So what does it mean to project farmers' practices into this when this? So we take these kind of average practices. Nothing is perfect, but it's definitely getting us much closer to what farmers seem to be doing and what would be the returns in these conditions. And it's striking to see how much that could actually affect the results that one gets.
Of course, the ideal would be to run these experiments in conditions that were indistinguishable from farming conditions. It sounds like that is something that's going to be impossible to achieve.
There is something that's very difficult, right? In lots of things that we have mentioned, that they know that they are in a study, hence they may behave differently. But the instructions that are given are very important. And many researchers are aware of this distinction. There is a classification that goes from lab conditions and then on-farm condition. Within on-farm conditions, it could be researcher-managed trials, or it could be researcher-designed but farmer-managed trials. The closer we get from in-farm conditions managed by farmers, the more we tell you, you use these inputs, but you get much more freedom to use them. And we're definitely not saying the initial research is not useful. You have to first figure out what's the potential of the inputs before you want to disseminate this to the farmers and test it with the farmers. But the message is rather, you have to go through this whole chain of evidence. Well, if you decide to promote some technologies before having tried it in farmer-managed trials, then you lose a lot of these conditions. So just make sure that you have some conditions where the message to the farmers is do it your own way, try these inputs, and then we'll still collect some of the data, but we won't judge you on how good you're doing. It's difficult, right, to get this right balance, but some researchers are trying to do it more this way. Also, do not try it only at the very end. It needs to integrate more of this kind of farmer-managed trials sooner. Be careful, for example, about how you select the farmers. Make sure you have a good diversity of the farmers. Make sure the message is not give us your best plot, but it's just trying to get some more representative plots, or sometimes they classify into good, bad, and average plots, and they make sure that they have a good diversity of these plots so that you have the intention to maintaining these representative conditions. And you want to integrate this early on because sometimes you do research for many years, and at the end you realize that no, maybe these seeds are too sensitive to some conditions that are very hard to change. And you'd rather not realize this after 10 years of research to develop these seeds, but to have integrated these kind of things sooner.
You've been around these experiments a great deal. We're not saying here that people just aren't putting enough effort into them. They're not doing them well enough. People try their very best to make them as representative as possible. So are there any easy gains that you think can be achieved? Or is it a case of taking more care with how we interpret and analyze those results and going through a series of prescribed steps like what you've been doing?
part of what we've been doing would be difficult to replicate because it requests much more data collection to then, we don't think everyone should try to then project what would be the returns in different conditions and do this econometric analysis. I think the message is more a bit like I was saying before, make sure that you try to have more conditions that are closer to the farmers. And it's not that people are not trying hard. In some cases, people are trying too hard to say, let's make sure that it's well preserved. But it's also sometimes a different question. There is a progressive evolution in the question that you try to answer. Early on in the research, you do want to know more about the potential, and that does require lab conditions and good conditions. Then you do want to know more about the conditions, the return in farmer conditions, and that's when you would have to adapt. Perhaps there is not enough balance at this stage between this research that looks at the potential and more research that looks at how well it can do in farmers' conditions, and making sure that before we want to promote something large scale, this step has been done. Because we all want to be helpful, hence when we think that something works well, we want to promote it as soon as possible. But you can actually do a lot of harm if you're promoting inputs that are not that great. So we have to be very careful. We have to first, as also institutions, donors, everyone, look for the evidence that this is working well in trial, but also in farmer kind of conditions. And the more you have all this set of evidence, the more you could feel confident with upscaling it rapidly. If you don't, then you should really go step by step, including this kind of research. If you had some vaccine, these times of COVID, let's say you have a vaccine that gives you a higher level of immunity, but it requires more difficult condition. It has to be frozen at minus 20 degrees Celsius or even less. Or you have another kind of vaccine that is not as difficult in terms of the conditions to maintain it so that it works well. Maybe the one that gives you higher immunity would give you the best results in lab conditions. But once you actually try to promote it in rural Africa, you say, okay, in practice, more than half of the time people do not freeze it, and then it ends up having zero immunity effect on the population. And worse, because they believe that they have this immunity and they don't. Then maybe you want to go for the other vaccine that's easier to promote and to apply in the right conditions. So inputs can have the same properties. Sometimes some look better in some conditions, but once you take it to a different set of conditions, it's a different set of inputs that will work better. So it's really having in mind that we do need to have this whole research process and we do need to test it, and don't stop looking for the results and what is the impact that it has on yield once you promote it. On the contrary, that's the time when you still want to see how well it is working with the farmers and then decide whether we upscale it or not.
Well, vaccine distribution is a whole other podcast, and it's probably one I'm going to be presenting before very long. Meanwhile, though, Rashid, this is potentially hugely powerful for the differences that it can make, as you say, to the wealth of some of the poorest people in the world. Rashid, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim.
This is one of those papers you can't afford not to read. It's called Reconciling Yield Gains in Agronomic Trials with Returns Under African Smallholder Conditions. It's published in Scientific Reports 10, and the authors are Rashid Lajaj, Karen Makor, Kargeli Masso, Moses Twitter, and Bernard Van Lowy. This has been a VoxDev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't ever miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform, and our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org.